Thank you, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be with you. Again, this is Chris Atwood. I'm the features editor with Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise magazine, and this is our Passions of Real Life Legends series. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, this series was inspired by my partner, Janet Atwood's book, The Passion Test, Discovering Your Personal Secrets to Living a Life on Fire. And twice a month in these interviews, we allow all of us to connect with people who have been incredibly successful at getting aligned with their own passions and living their own personal destiny. And for those of you who've been with us, I know you'll agree with me that the insights and the experiences that our guests share are absolutely illuminating, and I know many of our listeners have written and said how helpful it is to be able to hear firsthand from people who are doing it and have done it, what it takes to discover your passions and to live them on a daily basis. For those of you, again, that are not yet members of our Real Life Legends club, our Real Life Legends club, then I encourage you to become members, have access to the archives of all of the interviews that we have done to date, as well as our VIP members now receive CDs and transcripts of each of these interviews delivered twice a month. And in fact, we have a new opportunity for all of you to go to healthywealthyandwise.com, click on step number 2, and receive a free CD of one of our interviews with either Dr. Stephen Covey, Dr. John Gray, or Dr. Dennis Waitley. You can choose the one that you'd like just for the cost of shipping and handling. And again, that's at healthywealthyandwise.com, and then click on step number 2. Really, the inspiration of each of these calls is all of you. Janet and I do these calls because we know that every single one of you, every single one of us, is a unique individual who has unique gifts. And when you're living those gifts, when you're aligned with your passions, then you're creating more abundance, not only for yourself, but for everyone else in the world as well. And it's our hope and our desire that these calls and these interviews will help you in being able to live your own personal destiny. Tonight we have the great honor and opportunity to interview a man who has become a real life legend in the world of online marketing, in the internet. Stephen Pierce has gone from being a commodity trading advisor to one of the top internet marketers today. He created his wealth originally in commodities, and through his books, Rapid Fire Swing Trading and books like Fibonacci Secrets, which were incredibly successful in their own right. But when Stephen, a few years ago, released his first internet marketing book, Under Oath, The Truth, The Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth About Internet Marketing, he absolutely took the internet by storm. And today he stands with people like Yannick Silver and Jay Abraham and other masters in the field of internet marketing. And it is so exciting to be able to talk with someone who is making thousands and thousands of dollars online at the same time has a huge heart. One of the things that I wanted to mention about Stephen is that out of the income that he receives from all the different things that he's doing, he donates 15% of those proceeds to his church and to endeavors like the elimination of breast cancer and the Red Cross for tsunami relief and other great causes. So, Stephen, thank you so much for being with us tonight. It's really an honor.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. And now, Stephen, you haven't always been incredibly successful and extremely wealthy. Isn't that true?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah. So from what I understand, your upbringing wasn't exactly the ideal environment for learning how to become a successful commodity trading advisor or an internet marketer. Will you tell us the story of how you got to where you are today?
Right. Now, when I came up, I had like a decent household. Mom and dad were still together, but I kind of like created conditions that were much worse of my own doing. I dropped out of high school. I never went to college, obviously. I filed bankruptcy not once, but two unlucky times. Actually, the second time I went to go file the bankruptcy, they rejected it because I didn't know that you couldn't file another bankruptcy until after a certain period of time had transpired. So, you know, they didn't really accept that, that second bankruptcy, but I did my best to try to get it through. Situations were just really bad. I was homeless for like 3 months. And
wow.
I had over 12 different businesses fail as I was trying to figure my way out and feel my way through to try to figure out, you know, how I can lift myself from out of this, you know, apparent despair that I was in. I mean, it was horrible. And actually, I remember one time I was in the house and somebody that was dear to me, looked me right in my face and said, "Everything you touch turns to dust."
Oh.
That was a devastating point in my life because this was a person in my life that I pretty much looked up to, family member, blood relative, and it started a huge mental and emotional battle for me because I tried to find some kind of reference in my life that was like, you know what, that's not true because I did do something right here and, you know, it turned out okay. But only thing that I can remember were all the horrible things, like I got our family evicted because of doing stupid stuff and all the different things that just went belly up. So I had no point of reference of anything that that proved that, you know, that statement was wrong or that I could possibly be successful.
Now, Stephen, didn't you end up with a bullet in your leg somehow or something?
Yeah, well, actually, I was running the street. I was out there selling drugs, and this was during this stint when I had no self direction. So I was just following the people that seemed to be the strongest in the crowd, and they kind of, you know, in hindsight, they didn't have much direction either. So, you know, it's the old blind leading the blind. And so I ended up selling drugs on the street, and I was out there in Greensboro, North Carolina, out in the States, and had an altercation, big, you know, situation kind of blew up, and I ended up catching a bullet from a .22 in my right leg, which is still lodged in there right now, because at the time when I went to the Moses H. Cone Hospital, you know, I didn't have like an insurance card or anything. When you're selling drugs, you're mostly operating on a cash basis, right?
Yeah, right.
So the hospital, their explanation was, you know, it would be more dangerous to go in and get the bullet out than to leave it in there. But that was just their reasoning because, you know, you had this little black kid rolling up in there from the streets looking like a thug, no insurance card. He'll be okay with the bullet left in there. Let's clean him up. And, you know, that's it. That was my whole take on it. You know, after looking at the situation, they could have taken it out. But it's so I still have it in there as a reminder of, you know, what not to do.
Yeah. Well, and that must be a very real reminder of what you went through to get to where you are today, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what role have your passions, the things that get you excited and are most important to you, played in the success that you've enjoyed in the last years?
Well, I think passion is it's probably one of the most critical but yet misunderstood and displaced parts of a person's life if they want to experience any kind of success and fulfillment in anything.
Now, why do you say misunderstood? Talk about that.
Okay, because it's like this. I believe every single person that is born into this world has the power of passion within them. And we try to unlock it, but I think for those who struggle to unlock it, they're not able to do it because we try to go about it the wrong way. You know, I think some people confuse passion about being excited about something, and it's just the emotional outward appearance of the excitement and the goosebumps. Whereas I believe that what really unlocks passion is once you get in touch with what your mission is in life. Your mission, to me, is kind of like that key that unlocks that vault of that power within, which is that passion. Because if you think about people that, you know, you think about the people that survived concentration camps.
Right.
You know, they had a huge mission to be able to survive that. They had something that drew this passion for life out of them that they were willing to endure it. But for those people who, as far as their mission goes, they didn't see anything. They didn't see any kind of future or anything. Those were the people that pretty much gave up the ghost within those concentration camps.
Right.
So my whole thing is to unlock the passion, I don't think you go directly to the passion itself. You look to discover what your mission is in life. You know, what is it you're really about? Why are you here? Why do you exist? You know, what is that mission? And once you tap into what that mission is, bam, the passion comes automatically.
Now, how did you discover your mission? And how would you describe your mission today?
Initially, I think I kind of stumbled and fumbled and onto my mission. And it was kind of a process of, I'm traveling here. I had no coaches. I had nobody there on the sidelines to instruct me in the right way. So, and, you know, having dropped out of school, I didn't have any hopes for college, and the job opportunities were slim pickings. So I started picking up books, and the main book I started reading first was the Bible, and then I started reading Think and Grow Rich, and then Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude, and different books like that. And then I started to discover that, yeah, I did some pretty bad things and went through some pretty bad things, and life was pretty rough, but, you know, having taken stuff to the pawn shop and having thought bankruptcy and having been homeless and all these things wasn't really that bad. It wasn't a sign or an omen that life was over, and it definitely wasn't a predictor of what my future was supposed to be like, that I still had an opportunity, that I still had a choice to pick how my life was going to come out. And it was at that point that I really discovered, and I forgot who said the quote, but that the future is not some place we're going to, but it's one that we actually create. And the path is not something that's found, but it's one that's made. And it's
beautiful.
At that point, huh?
That's beautiful. Thank you.
And it was at that point that I discovered, you know what? I actually have this ability to create a life, to create a future, to create something that's extraordinary. Now, the question became, you know, what in the world is that going to be? And it was at that point in time that I started to, you know, try to figure out, you know, what were the things that I were, you know, what was I really good at? And, you know, what was I excited about? What really kept me up late at night worrying me or keeping me excited? And, you know, what was it that I felt kind of, for lack of a better word, was kind of like magical to me?
Yeah.
And as I started to take this inventory of my life, even acknowledging, you know, the bad things, because even in the bad things, I did some of the bad things so good, there had to be a talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like, well, you know, you were so good at being bad, there has to be some kind of gift or talent there, so that you can just kind of switch, and, you know, and direct to something else. And it was true.
Yeah.
So it was at that point that I started to discover, you know, what life, you know, what my life could really become, and my paradigm started to shift, and I started to develop this hope bubbling up inside, and I eventually got introduced to the futures market as I started to look at these different things, and I became so passionate about it, I became so wrapped up into it. It was just like a fire that was in me. That, you know, I consumed everything that I can get my hands on when it came to the markets. And the interesting thing was I didn't go into that initially to start a business. Everything else failed. This right here was my relief. yeah, you know, I mean, everything else, I mean, I was all over the different magazines and business opportunities. Just chasing that dollar, you know, like, you know what, saying to myself, that, you know what, if I get this amount of dollars or I make X amount of money, that's going to be the answer. That's going to solve my problems. And when I did make a little bit of money, you know, surprise, the problems didn't go away, and it didn't solve anything, you know, in the sense of what the big picture problems were, like lack of direction, lack of focus, lack of commitment, lack of concentration, all these other things.
Right.
So once I settled down and I became at peace with my past, I became at peace with, you know, who I was, and I started to acknowledge the possibilities, but also decided to take responsibility for my life and responsibility for my future, and I fully understood that what comes of my life is going to be of my own doing. It's kind of like to say, you know, it's not what happens to a man, but it's how a man responds to what happens to him. Because, you know, it's kind of like what we tell people when we talk to them. You have like this control center, and just think of a dartboard where you have these different layers and these different rings. Well,
yeah.
in the center of that, you have control. In the next ring, you have influence. And then in the ring outside of that, you have input. And then on the outer edge, you have no control. Many of the times, we go through our life extremely frustrated because we're out on that edge trying to control things that we have absolutely no control over, like events that have already taken place that we can't go back in time and change, but yet we allow them to control us, and they impact us, they drain us of energy, they distract us, they break our focus, they break our concentration, we become unproductive as a result of them. And not only that, we've built up all this negative energy inside of us, you know, and that's just some of the things. So we spend all this time out on this outer edge trying to deal with things and allowing things that we have absolutely no control over to control us. So I had to take an inventory of all the things that I have absolute total control over and make sure that I am not aborting any opportunities in my life because I'm diverting energies and focus on things that I have no control over. Now, things that I have control over that I'm not really good at, I can move to that area of influence. Maybe I can bring somebody else in or meet up with somebody else that I can turn that over to them, but yet I can still influence the process and influence the result, but not have to be concerned with controlling it because that's not one of my core strengths. So, in doing that, I take an inventory of what all my strengths are and the things that I have absolutely control over, which some of the core things are, like you have control over your thoughts, you have control over what you believe, you have complete control over what you feel. Despite the fact that we're human and what people say and what people do can impact us, we still have complete control over, you know, our own emotions. And one thing I had a struggle with was, because people say, well, you can control your thoughts. That was a big problem for me because I'm like, I don't know where you're coming from, but I can't control my thoughts at all.
Right.
I mean, I have all kinds of thoughts flying through my head, and I forgot who said it, but they said, and it struck me, and this is what gave me a breakthrough in controlling my thoughts. He said, you know, you can't stop a bird from flying over your head, but you can stop it from building a nest on it. And what he was saying was, you cannot stop all of these random thoughts from coming in your mind, but you don't have to capture them and allow them to sit there and incubate and become seeds in the soil of your brain and then spring up all these different roots and I mean, all these different things,
right.
Those different, what are those things called? You know, the things, and they go, weeds in your mind. So at that point, I was like, you know what, okay. So all these different thoughts, the different thoughts of doubt that may just come randomly, and these different things that come through my mind, I'm not going to sit there and capture them like a baseball in a mitt. You know,
right.
I'm just going to let it go by. I'm just
We don't have to dwell on the thoughts, right?
Right. We do not have to dwell on them. We can let them go, and we can direct our focus, and we can kind of like knock it out with like a baseball bat with a positive thought.
Right. Great. Excellent point. And I think all of us have the experience that it seems like thoughts are coming constantly all the time. And some, as you're saying, many of those thoughts are distracting. They're not particularly useful or productive. Sometimes they're thoughts like your relative who said everything that you do turns to dust. I know that many of our listeners can relate, and I can relate to the idea that sometimes those thoughts come up in our mind. So how do you deal with those thoughts, Stephen, when that, you know, your relative said it to you outside? What do you do when those thoughts come up inside?
Well, it's gotten to the point where I'm beyond the point where I thought I was crazy, because I was like, you know what, I don't think it's human to have this many thoughts. seriously, I was like, you know what, I have to be a part of a rare group of people that have a gazillion thoughts at one time. And I only tend to focus on the negative ones, right?
Right.
So I kind of got way beyond that. And, I found that one way to be able to, actually two ways to be able to combat the thoughts was to spend regular time in meditation, and, you know, meditation where it goes from just, you know, sitting in complete stillness where, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter what thought comes to mind. It's just blank space and you're just calm. And then the other one is just visualizing, you know, that extraordinary life today, that extraordinary life in the future, and kind of like programming yourself, being able to, I mean, because pretty much everyone on this phone knows that the mind is not able to tell the difference between something that's been vividly imagined and actually experienced. But we know it, but it's like none of us really use it to our full benefit.
Right.
So sitting down and actually visualizing, you know, the experiences and different things like that, and, you know, for people that need, you know, something great. I mean, I know you're going to have Paul Shealy on. I mean, they have great products to do that, to help people to kind of guide that mental process. And the other thing is, you know, being committed to something, you know, and being committed to something specific. Because, you know, people are like, well, you know what? I am committed. I'm committed to this and I'm committed to that. But when you ask them what commitment is, you know, many people don't really have, you know, their own definition of commitment that they live by. But for me, commitment is concentrated, conscious intent. And I think if you have concentrated conscious intent on something, you are so fixated, you are so white hot about it, these things dominate your mind, that because the conscious space of the mind is so small as compared to the unconscious, there's not much room in space for all these different random and negative thoughts that try to jump in there to hang around. So it's pretty much gotten to the point with me where they're no longer, it doesn't seem like it's this huge wave of thoughts coming. It almost seems like they kind of like jump in to see if there's some space for them to hang around.
Yeah.
But when they get knocked out, they're just like gone.
Yeah.
So
that's great. Isn't that great? And now when you talk about commitment, it reminds me, brings us back to this idea of mission, because certainly when you're clear on your mission, then that increases the commitment, right?
Right. Here's why mission is important. Let me ask you a question, Chris. Which way do you think is the easiest to put together a puzzle? We have a 1,000-piece puzzle. And
okay,
I show you all the pieces and say, Chris, have at it, put this puzzle together. Or I'll show you a picture of the puzzle and give you the pieces to say put it together. Which one is going to be easy for you to do?
Show me the picture.
Right. And that's what mission is all about. Many of us, we go through life, we go through seminars, we read books, we get on incredible teleconferences like yours, and we become, we have all this information, but yet we still crave so much more knowledge, and we're not even using what it is we have, and it frustrates people. The more they want, the more they get, the more frustrated they get, because it just stacks and piles up on all this other information that they have, that they haven't used, and they aren't able to find out how to get unstuck. And the thing is this, it becomes extremely difficult to put the pieces together in your life if you have no idea what your life is supposed to be like, if you have no idea what it is you're moving to, if you have no clue what this future profile of your life looks like. How do you know where all these different pieces, the seminars, the coaches, the teleconferences, the books, and all these different things you come in contact with in your life, how do you know where all that fits if you don't even have an idea what the future looks like? So that's what mission is all about. Mission gives you a picture. It allows you to start to see more clearly and more vividly what your future is about, what you're here for, why you exist. And when as these different things come into your life, you're able to understand what roles they play. And when you understand what roles they play, you're able to act on them much quicker and able to use them much faster, as opposed to, you know, you have this beautiful car. It's a high-priced car. It's an expensive car. Everybody would like to have a car like it, but there's like zero visibility outside, so you can't go anywhere.
Right.
You know, so you have all this potential. You have this ability to accomplish things that, you know, that are probably beyond your wildest dreams, but you're paralyzed and your dreams are being aborted every second because you have not gotten clarity in your life. You don't know what your mission is. And you're not able to put all these pieces together that right now seem kind of random. But when you start to get a clear picture of the future, these pieces that once looked random start to come together and look more orderly, and then you're able to use them more efficiently and leverage them so that you can make the impact and like them, give the value to the people that you're supposed to be giving the value to, and as a result, experience that fulfillment financially, intellectually, sexually, emotionally, materially, in all these different areas that you want.
Now, how do you go about discovering your mission, though, Stephen?
I think you can kind of like ask the basic questions. You like, know, what are you passionate about? You know, what do you do, that when you do it, you feel most alive when you're doing it? You know, what are you drawn to? What problems anger you, the most? You know, the things that kind of like keep you upset the most, you know?
All right.
What changes in the world does it seem like you're really passionate about, having to, take place? You know, what, type of talents and skills do you possess, that you feel like, man, you've had these things with you, for a long time. But one thing that's really good for people to do is to kind of like do a mission movie in their mind, and you can kind of do this in one of those moments of meditating, and what all you do is we call it mission possible.
And oh, good. I was just going to ask you that. Great.
Yeah, what you do is you begin the scene of your life. You sit back, relax, close your eyes, breathe slowly and deeply, just get extremely relaxed. And, you begin the scene of your life, where you are, right now, like maybe, after this teleconference, where you are today and, all the way up to today. And then the next scenes in the movie are about you living that extraordinary, magical life. And within that life, it's balanced, it's fulfilling, and you're adding value to people. You're being compensated for that value, and life is grand. What are you doing? How is this happening? And maybe even through that process, now people can discover what their mission is all about.
Fabulous. Now, how has that shown up in your life, Stephen? How would you describe your mission today?
My mission is really about, I'm really big on redefining value for people by over-delivering on their expectations. And I've been bad at it before, and I've gotten much better at it right now. And the reason that's really a mission, and that mission rather is into helping people become better traders, helping people become better marketers, helping people become better in their personal lives. The thing is helping people to discover these assets that they have, these opportunities that they have that they're missing because they're not paying attention to the right things, and then showing them how to leverage and exploit those. And the value aspect is important because everybody wants to, for the most part, experience some kind of financial success, right?
Sure.
So that's a given. So it's like, why talk about, how much more money you want to make? Because everybody wants to make more money for the most part, so that's a given. But the thing is, until there's an overwhelming amount or at least enough balance of value to to the people that you want to serve that they're willing to give you the money. That's not going to be an exchange of funds. So if you focus more so on the value that you're going to give to a very specific predefined group of people as opposed to how much money you want to make, then you will actually have the money to come automatically, because that's what people do. When you look at the exchange, whether it's the stock market or whether it's in the marketplace or in the malls, people are exchanging the money they make for the value that they're going to get from buying whatever it is they're buying. So by us focusing on redefining value, by over-delivering on people's expectations, we are positioning ourselves to always succeed, because that keeps us market-focused. That keeps us focused on the client, the customer, and what their needs are. I mean, the session is, you know, what will make our clients' lives much better, and how can we build our business around that? That's how we can build more value. And as you know, I mean, if somebody offers you an overwhelming amount of value to help you solve a problem that you're willing to pay to get solved, and this person is offering you the greater degree of value, it doesn't have to be a price value, it can be some kind of other value, you're going to be willing to pay them to get that. So the money becomes automatic.
Right. Now, I'd like to see how this has shown up in your life, how you've experienced it. Would you share with all of us some of the, maybe two or three of the best moments in your career, and what made them the best? What was it that made them stand out for you?
Well, I would say, interesting enough, they're probably not financial. One of the most defining points in my life was when I gave my life to Christ. Another most defining point in my life is when I met my wife, Alicia. Mm-hmm. She gave me a great deal of balance and focus, and her and her family, they enhanced me in ways that, you know, nothing else, actually can. And it actually helps me to be a better person in what it is that I do in providing value to other people. And in return, as a result of that, you know, our life becomes more enriched and, more fulfilling. I think those are two defining moments in my life that have had a huge ripple effect on everything, whether it's personal or professional.
Well, and I think it's so illuminating that those things that you define as being the best moments have to do with your spiritual and emotional life more than your material life, and yet those are the things which, what I'm hearing, those are the things which have really driven your success and the fulfillment on the material level. Is that right?
Right. I mean, when you get in touch with those things, you start to get in touch with, you know, with your values and with the, and understanding that, you know, there's something much bigger to life than just, you know, getting up in the morning and marketing products and services and seeing how much more money you can make today than you did, you know, yesterday. You know, I mean, yeah, granted, you know, marketing is fun, making money is fun, but there's much more to life, than that. And, you know, that's for everybody to discover themselves. But when you tap into that, when you tap into, that higher source of power and again, that mission and that purpose in life, you know, the wealth flows, the wealth comes, and it's not that life is perfect. It's not that you're without error. It's not that you're without challenges. It just makes it a little bit easier to deal with the challenges. You have a better understanding of the challenges, and your perspective on those challenges are a little bit different as well. So overall, the quality of life in the face of all of your challenges becomes much different.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about those challenges for a second, because I know we all experience them, and you've enjoyed extraordinary success, and you certainly are looked at as one of the top people in your field now. And yet, there are, I know, must have been obstacles and challenges, even after you went through that major experience of moving out of the life of dealing drugs and all of that, and got into commodities and then into internet marketing. I know that there must have been some obstacles and challenges. And did you run into those along the way? And could you tell us how you faced them and what it took to overcome those?
Well, there were, there still are, and there will always be.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's kind of like it's knowing that it's going to happen, and it's kind of like a boxer going into the ring. And it would be very unrealistic for him to walk in that ring and think that the probability of him getting hit by a punch is zero.
That's true.
I mean, so imagine him going into the ring and he gets hit and he's just like, that's it, baby, I'm out.
Right.
That's it. I can't believe this just happened. I actually got punched. That's unrealistic. But sometimes we tend to go through life thinking that, you know, we try to take on this new endeavor in a business, or we take our business to the next level, or a relationship or something, that it's supposed to be a red carpet affair, you know. It's supposed to be, you know, bells, whistles, cameras, and everybody's celebrating the moment. It's going to be with these, and, you know, that's it. That's not how it happens. Every single thing you want to accomplish in this life is going to be challenged, is going to be tested. If you just think about the natural system in schools, I mean, granted, I didn't graduate, but I do know there are tests. Right. I mean, when you graduate from high school, you don't graduate without a test, right?
Yeah.
And if you want to go into college, don't you have to take tests like some SATs or stuff like that, right?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, think about it. If just in the school systems, and or maybe even for a job or something, you have to take and pass tests so you can graduate and go to the next level. Why do we think that life itself, the process of becoming successful, the price of moving vertically in life to what we would call the next level, is not going to be with tests? It's going to be tests. So the thing is, eliminate from your thinking that you're not going to be tested, you're not going to be tried. I don't care how skilled you are, how passionate you are. In fact, that passion, that commitment, that focus, that concentration, that determination is going to be tested. You know, and I think that the truth of our commitment and the truth of our determination comes out from those tests. Just like fire purifies gold, and just like it's the strongest wind that makes for the strongest trees, and it's the pressure on a rock that brings forth those diamonds. All those different things that come into our life are not there to destroy us. They're not there to kill us. They're there to purify us and make us stronger. But we look at them as signs, and we look at them as omens, and we just turn around. It's like, this is not meant to be. And constantly, on a continuous basis, we tend to fail the test, and we wonder why it is we're not going to succeed.
Right.
I don't care which way you try to get to success. It doesn't matter. The tests are going to be there. There are no scholarships. Well, maybe there are, but very, very few. You know, maybe you're born a Hilton or something like that. You know what I mean? Maybe you're born to Bill Gates or something. You know, very few scholarships are given out. So few, they're non-existent. Okay? So, for the most part, everybody else has to pretty much earn their way. And that's for all the better, because you're able to appreciate it more, you're able to respect it more, you're not going to squander it for the most part, because the level of education and maturity that comes with growing in your wealth, instead of just coming into it like hitting the lottery or being born into it, it's a little bit different than having to get there and grow like a bodybuilder in the gym, having to, you know, increase the weights to get bigger and to get stronger. I mean, that's just how it is in our life. And for me, I came to the point where I understood that. So I wasn't shocked and surprised. It went through the process of what, so what, now what? Meaning, okay, what just happened? So what does that mean? Now what am I going to do about it?
Would you repeat those? Those are great.
Yeah, it's what, so what, now what? It's like, what just happened? So what does this mean? Now what am I going to do about it?
Fabulous.
You know, instead of talking about, look what just happened to me, you're going to get a pity party, you know,
right,
you know, trying to get some sympathy and all that other kind of stuff. You know what? It's just a big waste of time.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, if you're going to go for it, then you just have to go for it. You know,
right.
I mean, you just have to be, again, you have to have that concentrated conscious intent, that full, all-out commitment. And, you know, it's just like challenges and tests are par for the course. Gold is purified through the fire, and so is your life.
Well, now, Stephen, as I'm listening to you, what comes to my mind is that many of us tend to think, well, if I don't pass the test, then I really won't be successful. And I'm wondering, couldn't it also be the case that if we run into a test and we feel like we fail the test, that maybe that's a signal or a sign to us that we're on the wrong path to begin with? If we don't really feel the passion or the commitment that you were talking about to keep on going even beyond that, couldn't that be a sign or a signal that we, in fact, we're going down the wrong path and that we're still need to look or find that thing that is going to create that deep level of commitment, that it doesn't matter what comes up?
Right. Well, If it's like an op-hop situation, and that means a person that's hopping from opportunity to opportunity, it's like the money doesn't come fast enough, so now they're committed to another business opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's somebody who's just out there for the quickest buck. So yeah.
And they're not really committed to anything.
Yeah, no, they're not. Well, they're committed to the dollar through the channel that will deliver it the fastest.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's about it. And the moment that dries up, then they're going to lose their commitment from that, and they're going to try to look to be committed, lightly and softly committed to something else. But
right.
I totally agree. If you come up with challenges and you're quickly discouraged, I mean, you pretty much have zero desire to stick to it, then yeah, I would do a heart level check and reevaluate, you know, what this is really all about. Why are you really, pursuing this? What are the deeper, more important reasons for you pursuing this? Now, if you are fully committed to it and you know this is what you're about, you know that this is your mission, then, and you come up with these challenges, I wouldn't just continue to run. I would do an evaluation because you would want
right.
to learn from it. I mean, maybe
right.
it's telling you need some assistance.
Yeah.
It's telling you need to modify your approach.
Absolutely.
I mean, because if, you're looking to see the sunset and you're running the wrong way, I don't care how fast you run, I don't care how far you run, it's just not going to happen. Right?
It's
just not going to happen. So you need to, at those moments where you have those challenges, the greater degree of wisdom comes from understanding what happens when something doesn't work, not
yeah.
when things work out.
And don't you find, Stephen, that when you feel that deep commitment, that it's a lot easier to take those moments to look at it because you know nothing is going to stop you, and yet you need to adjust. You need to learn from what it is that just happened.
Absolutely. At that point in time, it's clear that all those challenges are just par for the course. They're just part of the process. It's not, there's no disconnect. For example, breathing. Breathing is not just inhaling. Breathing is not just exhaling. It's a process of inhale and exhale, correct?
Right.
For the person who's fully committed and they know that this is what it's about and they have these different challenges, it's just part of the process. It's just like inhaling and exhaling is a part of breathing. The challenges are a part of the process of becoming successful. And they also don't just have their eyes on the big picture. They see the little wins along the way, because if you think about it, it's not the home runs that win the games. It's the base hits. It's the singles, the doubles, and you know the RBIs. It's the accumulation of all these things that will win games. Yes, maybe one basket or that one last hit or that one last catch wins the game. But that was that one instance that would not have been able to win the game if all the other smaller things didn't accumulate to that moment. So I'm saying that to say that. In our lives, we have all these little things that happen, these little things that give us momentum, that take us closer to where it is we want to be, that we basically disrespect because we don't celebrate them. We don't acknowledge them. You know, for many people, they're not big enough to celebrate, acknowledge, and be happy about. They just want that big win. They want the Super Bowl. They want the Stanley Cup. You know, I don't know when anybody's going to get a Stanley Cup. You know? or they want the NBA championship, and that's fine. But you know what? To get there, you have to win. You know, you have to win enough games. You have to grind out that yardage and get the ball upfield. And that's how it is in life. You know, if you're grinding out this yardage in your life, and you're starting to move forward and progress toward this ever increasing goal. So I hope you don't just have this one fixation and bam, once you get that, you know, you've reached the pinnacle of life. That's not how it is. You're going to always be, you know, expanding, you know, what your objectives are. So learn to appreciate the daily wins in your life. And if you measure and you chart what happens in your life on a daily basis that you're doing deliberately, with full out commitment, remember, concentrated, conscious intent, you will see that on a regular daily basis, you have all these small wins. And when you look at that, you will become incredibly encouraged and you will see that you can actually win, and you can win because all of these small steps are going to accumulate to this big win that you're ultimately looking to get. So acknowledge, see the small wins and celebrate those on a daily basis.
That's so powerful. So powerful. One of the things that Janet and I teach in our courses and seminars is something we call the appreciation game, which is very much about that. It's going through and looking and appreciating what it is, what are the wins in your life, and it is so incredibly powerful. Now, what happens when you actually enjoy some big success? You know, Stephen, many people look up to you, many people view you as being a leader. Does the passion go away once you're successful?
Not for me. For me, success is not just the financial aspect. It's I link a lot of fulfillment to what actually was the result, the channel, and the path that brought in the finances. Like, you know, the clients we help, the businesses we help, the individuals that we help. It's the actual process that brings the fulfillment. And because you want more of that, and you're driven by that, you're just going to go and go and go and go and go, and it's just going to be this, it's just going to be this forward momentum despite the challenges, despite any setbacks, despite any roadblocks, you know, despite any moments where you may feel a little discouraged or something. You're just going to continue to move, forward, understanding that your fulfillment is not linked to just the financial, rewards of the process, but it's linked to, understanding the impact and the change that you create in the people's lives that you're touching, because that's what it's about. I mean, if you want to be highly compensated, you have to change other people's lives.
Well, now what I'm hearing is that for you, and I know many of our listeners can relate to this, that's what in fact ignites the passion, is the changes that you're making in people's lives. Isn't that true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, if it was really just about the money, you know, why would some of the most popular, most beloved people, you know, celebrity-wise in the history have committed suicide or allowed themselves to, be victims of, you know, drug overdoses and stuff? I mean,
right.
You know, people that, you know, that were depressed, you know, I mean, again, millions of fans, millions of dollars, loved around the world, but they commit suicide. I mean, obviously there's something bigger than it just being about the money, it being about fame and popularity. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but I think you're setting yourself up for a huge failure if that's what you think is ultimately about. You know, getting on the cover of X magazine or being on X show or making X amount of dollars. Yeah, there's a certain amount of joy that comes with that, and if you get that or when you get that, you should enjoy it. And that should just be a part of the process, a part of the joy, and a part of the fulfillment. It should not be 100% of it.
Right. Good, good, good. Now, you became a legend in the internet marketing world when you released your book, The Truth, The Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth About Internet Marketing. Can you tell us the story of how you went from commodities trading to writing this book and why and how it became such an incredible success?
Okay. Well, the thing is, you know, we made millions of dollars selling trading products.
Right.
Right. And to sell a ton of trading products, you have to be pretty good at marketing. You know, you don't have to be the best, but you have to be pretty darn good.
Right.
Right. And with that, we became extremely good at marketing products, connecting with marketplaces, building relationships, building lists, and, you know, marketing online and marketing offline. And what happened was, throughout that process, you know, we are big accumulators and students of marketing wisdom, regardless of where it comes from. So, I mean, we buy a ton of stuff, a ton of courses, a ton of books, whether they're downloadables or whatever. I think my monthly budget for Amazon is probably like $750. No, seriously.
That's a lot of books.
You'd be surprised. I mean, I'm a huge student. I read it probably like 3 hours a day. Then I mind map stuff out. I mean, because you want to get an edge and you want to be out there, you have to know what's going on. And if you think about it, somebody says, well, they're an expert at marketing and they know everything about marketing. Just go to Amazon and type in marketing and see how many books are in there. Now, that doesn't mean you have to read all those books. That just lets you know how much more information and different views there are out there on marketing. So,
right.
So how much more you can learn about marketing almost seems endless. You know what I mean?
And sure.
Even if you don't want to buy from Amazon, just go to a local library. But whatever it is, commit yourself to whatever it is you decide you're going to pursue and that you're passionate about. Commit yourself to mastering it and becoming the absolute expert, the number one go-to guy or the number one go-to gal in that. And the only way to do that is to learn, study, integrate, apply, modify, et cetera. So with that, going through this process of buying a bunch of stuff, we saw that, man, there was a lot of products that were in heavy circulation that were absolute garbage. You know, a lot of people were buying them, but they were not delivering anything that was usable for people if they were going to really experience, you know, success on the internet. Some of them had small nuggets. Some of them had nuggets that, the basic internet marketer actually probably wouldn't catch on to and be able to apply. So our whole thing was, you know, we've had all these different experiences, so let's just have some fun and write a book and talk about them. Talk about, you know, some of the affiliates that owed us thousands of dollars and ripped us off without saying their names or anything, and and all these different things, some of the different things that were out there, and then, you know, some of the strategies that we've been using for years that, you know, eventually people caught on to, and for them it was new, for us it was old.
Uh-huh.
And I think the authenticity of the ebook is what people like. Now, granted, some people like the whole search engine aspect with our smart pages and stuff like that, which is fine. But I think,
yeah.
I think in totality, people like the fact that, it was a real ebook, and it wasn't one of these books written by somebody that, you know, that's teaching you how to market on the internet, but they haven't really made any money on the internet. You know, we're
right,
millions
right,
on the
sure.
internet. You know, so we came from a position of first-hand experience, and that gave us a great deal of credibility and authority, and I think people were able to detect that.
Yeah. Now, in the online marketing world, how does passion play a role? I mean, is passion important if someone's wanting to do something online? Clearly, you've talked about mission tonight, and you've given some really wonderful useful tips and ways for people to approach living life passionately. How does that translate into building and creating an online business?
I would say, if what you're going to be doing online is connected with your passion, or if it isn't, whatever it is, focus on doing one thing great. Focus on doing one thing great. Forget trying to do 20 things great or 20 things okay. Focus on doing one thing great. So when people look at you, they're able to quickly and immediately define, in their minds what you're all about and that you are the best at doing that. So when it comes down to this need being filled, you're the person they're going to go to because you do this one thing great. And maybe, see, here's the thing that everybody has to understand. This is true for business as pretty much as it is true for life. 80% of what it is you do in your business can be quickly and easily duplicated by your competitors. It's
right.
The other 20% that you need to discover and master, because that's going to be your competitive advantage. And if you don't take the time to discover what that is, then you're going to always be in this battle of commodity prices. You're going to always be in a position where competitors can come in and take your market, or you're probably just not going to get the kind of momentum that it is that you want to be able to seize that mental real estate. I mean, you hear people talk about the offline real estate, which is fine, and you have people talking about the online virtual real estate, which is fine. But as far as I'm concerned, the most important real estate you need to capture if you want to have any kind of sustaining success that continues to move up that trajectory where it is you want to go, you need to capture a predefined area of mental real estate in your market's mind. And you do that by doing one thing right, so that in their mind, they have defined you as that person that they're going to go to for that because you do it better than anybody else. Because, see, you come up to people and they'll be like, you know, this is what they do, and we have to remind people that, you know what, in today's marketplace, it's not about what you do. It's about what you do better than everybody else.
Right.
Right? It's not about what you do. It's about what you do better than everybody else. So focus on that. Do a SWOT analysis. You know, your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Find out what your strengths are individually in your life as well as in your business. Find out what your weaknesses are so that you can find out how you can improve on them or protect them, and the opportunities so that you can exploit them, and the threats so that you can try to minimize or neutralize them. And, of course, you know, what your strengths are so that you can leverage them into the available opportunities. And, you know, in fact, you know, in talking about that, I think everybody, you know, listening should do a SWOT analysis on their personal life, because we tend to, as people, be extremely hard on ourselves, and we tend to only think about what we do wrong, not what we do right.
Right.
And we harbor on those things, and we never take a full inventory of what it is we're really good at and what it is we do right. But if you take the time to do a SWOT analysis, an internal SWOT analysis are your strengths and weaknesses, while an external SWOT analysis are the opportunities and threats. So if you do a SWOT analysis to find out what you're really good at, what your strengths are, while at the same time, you know, fully acknowledging and accepting your weaknesses, you'll find out that, you know what, you know, people can say you suck, but you know what, you'll find out you don't suck that bad. You know, you have some things that you're really good at. But here's the thing, if you're trying to operate in an area to impress people, or because it seems like the right thing to do, is popular, is the going trend or whatever, but you're trying to operate in an area that is not your strength, it's your weakness, yeah, you're going to be pretty bad at it. You're going to suck at it. So if you find out what it is you're good at and what your strengths are, and you operate in that, you're not going to be able to help but glow. People are going to be able to see that it's a natural talent. People are going to be able to see that, and that star that you have is going to glow naturally because it's coming from your natural strength, as opposed to you trying to manufacture strength in an area that you're operating in that's a natural weakness. Does that make sense?
Sure. And is there a way for us, as we're going along, to get clues or better ideas of of what are those things that really are our unique gifts or our natural talents?
Yeah, like if you were to, you know, ask some questions about your strengths, you know, just, you know, start off by asking, you know, like, you know, what are my abilities, you know, what are my attitudes, what are my skills, and, you know, and what is the knowledge that I possess that, you know, that I had that others would probably consider to be my strengths. You know, you can also do, if you want to find out what your knowledge strengths are, you know, do a mind map and, like, take a big piece of paper and put a circle in the middle and write in there what I know. And then just start drawing these different branches with things, you know, and put into each circle things that you know, and then ask yourself, what do I know about that? And then write down all, you know, connect more branches and circles and write down what you know about it, and then ask even more questions, you know, what do I know about that? And you'll find out, because here's the thing, we don't necessarily really forget stuff. If we don't have strong memory threads to a lot of different things, then it's going to be kind of like out of reach of our conscious mind to access it, and our conscious mind can only hold but so many facts at one time. So
right.
Throughout our life, we have accumulated a huge amount of intelligence, but we're not in contact with it. So
right.
If you take the time to just do a simple mind map, you know, just asking yourself the question, what do I know? And then just start to make connections. And then when you find something, just ask a simple question, what do I know about that? And just start coming up, and you'll start to see that within you is this huge wellspring of intelligence and of information and of knowledge that you accumulated from school and from the streets and from relationships and from reading and from television and from all over the place. And then you know what you're going to do? You're going to get up and say, Eureka, I am a genius. Seriously, we have so much information in us, but we do not take an inventory of everything that it is that we have. So we do a disservice to ourselves. We do a disservice to the people that are in our lives, because we're running around like the guy in, you know, Acres of Diamonds. You know the story. You know,
right.
he abandons his storehouse of wealth, thinking that the wealth was someplace else.
Mm.
And inside of all of us right now, I would almost guarantee you it's the storehouse of wealth, because just like a caterpillar is engineered and genetically designed to become a butterfly, I believe that every single one of us, down to the cells in our body, are engineered and designed to be successful. But unlike the butterfly, who can't make conscious choices to resist being cocooned and all this other kind of stuff,
right,
or jump, leap off rocks or something and commit caterpillar suicides and all these different things, we have a choice.
Yes.
And the butterfly, the caterpillar, unless he's stomped on, I mean, he is not going to be able to resist the process. He will be cocooned, and he's going to become a butterfly, or she, if they are, you know, if they have genes like that. But,
right.
but with us, we have choices. That power of choice sometimes aborts the cocooning process, or we just die in the cocoon. Because if you think about a cocoon, what is it? It's lonely, it's dark, it's probably cold, you're by yourself, you seem isolated from everybody else, but bam, right from out of that cocoon comes what? This big, beautiful butterfly. So the question becomes this. Not only what does your future look like, but what does the path look like to get there? Because you have where you want to be tomorrow or in the future, and then you have where you are today. And in between there, you have this gap. And that gap has to be filled if you want to be able to experience life as you picture it with that future profile. But to do that, you not only have to know what actions you have to take, but what does it look like? So you're not taken by any surprises. And again, that kind of goes back to the aspect of, you know, how do you deal with challenges? Well, we know they're going to be there, so, you know, we don't get sucker punched by a challenge, because we know it's going to be there. And we're not taken aback by it, and we're not shocked by it. Nobody should be shocked by it. It's like, okay, well, you know, like we talked about, what, so what, now what?
Right. Beautiful. And I love this point you made, that 80% of what we do our competitors can copy, but 20% is what we focus on of what's absolutely unique for us. And I wonder, how does that appear for you, Stephen? What's your 20%? What is it that sets you apart and made you stand out and that your competitors can't even begin to copy?
The way we connect with our clients in our marketplace.
Uh-huh.
So many people are so driven by the volume and by the dollars that there's a certain disconnect from the marketplace. In ours, we're driven, we are able to connect with people on such a different level, which is important than a lot of other people in our products and our services and our events. And for us, that's become a huge strategic advantage, because some people don't want to do it. Some people are too high and mighty to do it. Some people, as a friend of mine say, they go Hollywood and they don't want to do it. They don't want to be bothered by it. And, you know, they just want to collect the money as quickly as possible. in the shortest time possible and, you know, leave everybody else to their own devices with their products or with their services. And that's not how we do it. We're able to connect with people on a much different level, on a much stronger level. And when you do that, you can not only command premium prices, but you can command premium prices, on a more continuous and more frequent basis and ultimately end up making more money than the other people who are not willing to connect on that level. So when you have people that are not willing to give the kind of time, attention, and personal service the way we give it, and that's what the market needs, wants, and feels that's a necessity to connect with, then who do you think wins?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, you've been talking about a lot of things other than internet marketing, and we so appreciate that. And do you teach courses and programs on internet marketing as well?
Yes, we actually have our own training facility. If you talk to anybody that's ever come out to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to any of our events, we have creativity and innovation events, we have strategic planning events, and we have internet marketing events, you will not find a single person who, you'll probably have half of them almost come to tears about the experience. And I kid you not. I mean, it's a facility that you have to see to believe, because it's uniquely designed. And it's designed to give you the most memorable time of your life. And we keep groups small enough so that all of us, including myself, we have a great time interacting in all the different activities. The learning environment is such that you're not being preached to or the old, what they call the sage on the stage, but it's more like the guide on the side, where a person is actually helping you facilitate yourself through the process of application so that you can learn it, understand it, implement it, and begin the process of integrating it into your life and into your business while you're there at our events. So we take a completely different approach than most events. We don't pack them in there in large numbers. We keep the numbers small enough so that we can work with people on a one-on-one basis so they can get personal attention from all of us and the staff and the coaches that are actually there. We don't distance ourselves from people. When there's breaks, we don't take off. We engage in all the extracurricular activities like whirly ball and laser tag that we do for brain breaks. we have a great time at our event, and it's just one of those things. I mean, we have a ton of testimonials from people that come through, written testimonials and video testimonials. And I mean, if you hear the kind of testimonials and feedback that we get, it just makes you say, you know what, I have to go there and understand what it is they're talking about, because truly it's a unique and one of a kind experience. And it's not because, and I'm not just saying it because it's my place, but it's something that's created, not just by me, but by the whole team of people that we have that work there, and by an environment that we deliberately crafted in understanding how people learn. Most people, when they try to learn something, they may go into a room, pick up a book or do something like that, and then they try to study and retain the information. That's fine. You could probably learn a little bit that way. But there are optimal ways to learn, to take in information and have that information to stick and have a higher degree of comprehension at even a higher speed. And if you understand the whole brain process of learning and integrating, then you will be able to appreciate the kind of environment that we set up, which is kind of like a cross between a rock concert, Toys R Us, and a convention.
If you can
kind of picture all those combined, when you walk in, you have beautiful colors, you have great tactile sensations, you have incredible aromas, you have beautiful music playing, and like in our main training area, just we have different kind of scenes. I mean, we have scenes that you think Janet Jackson is about to come on stage or something like that. You know, I mean, but it's a very festive event. It's an environment that's filled with a ton of energy, and here the people feel like they're at home, and they feel very comfortable, and they have a lot of fun, and that makes learning a whole lot easier for them while they're there, in addition to the other ways we've structured and orchestrated. And that's probably a good word. The whole environment is orchestrated to give you 10 to 100 times more than you would getting that same information in a normal environment.
Wonderful. Well, and just listening to you, I get a sense that one of the reasons it's all designed like that is because you really like to have fun as well.
Oh, I love to have fun. I love to have fun. I mean, you know what? If in your life and in your business you're not having fun, I mean, you've heard it said before, then you have to be doing something wrong, because being successful is not supposed to be a chore. And
yeah.
I don't want to say it's not supposed to be hard, because it's going to be challenging. But
right.
It just depends on how you look at and view challenges. But it's not supposed to be a chore that you feel like, you know, like, man, do I have to do this? You know, you, you should be so into it that you're more so like, you know what, I actually get to do this today.
Right.
You know, not do I have to do this today. I mean, you should be so in love, so in love with the process, so in love with the results that you're bringing to people that you can't wait to do it again. Even if you're tired, you know, like, you know what, I'm going to recharge my batteries, but man, I can't wait to get up and do this again.
Right. Well, thank you, Stephen. And you know, at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, we believe strongly in the power of intention to manifest outcomes. So would you share with us what is your biggest current project and what intention would you like us here at Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise, along with our readers and listeners, to hold for you?
With our facility, we want to target those that really want to experience success as entrepreneurs or in their small, medium, or large businesses, and have them to see that there is really something out there for them that can help them become successful. And we want to redefine that value for them and allow them to see that, you know what, there is a place that you can go and have an unbelievable, memorable experience that is impactful, that will produce measurable results that you do get a significant ROI off of. So we're looking to, you know, reach those small entrepreneurs as well as the small and medium large businesses that are looking to, you know, once and for all, go to a place that has proven strategies and tactics and systems and methods that can help them to become successful in business and in their personal life and have a great time doing it once and for all.
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. You know, Stephen, one of the reasons I was so excited that we got to interview you tonight is that many of our listeners have told us that they just feel challenged by how to take their passions and do what they love and make money doing it. And I know that you clearly have mastered this art. And I know you have a program called the Secrets of Creating Wealth, and I want to invite our listeners to go to www.healthywealthynwise, healthy, wealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/Pierce. P is in Paul, IERCE. And they'll be able to read something about it, but could you just share with us for a couple of minutes, what is your Secrets of Creating Wealth program?
It's two audio CDs, and I believe you have an option of getting a workbook that kind of like talks about, you know, my life and the different things that I discovered along the way, like the power of the third influence and, like talk about challenges, like when my wife was diagnosed with ovarian cancer and, you know, and what it is we did with that. And, you know, in all praises to Jesus, she is 100% in, recovery and she's doing great. Everything is normal and, you know, we get those tests every 3 months, and for me, for her, she's fine, but for me, I'm always a little on pins and needles, but it always comes back, you know, great. So we continue to pray and hope that that's going to continue to stay that way as we continue to look more and more to live in a healthy lifestyle. But it talks about the path and the road that I took, because to become successful. And saying that, people need to understand that you can have your strategic focus, you know, but you have to have operational flexibility. And that's probably business terms. What that means in your life is you can know what it is you ultimately want to achieve, but understand that there's multiple means of getting to that end. And don't necessarily box yourself in thinking that, well, the only way I'm going to accomplish this is if I do this, that, and or the other. But be open and be flexible and know that there's multiple ways to get there, just like there's multiple strategies you can use to market a business. I'm not saying hop from one thing to the other, but keep open and understand that the only constant is change. And if you're not adapting to how things are changing, you're gonna probably end up being screwed trying to get to something using a means that is no longer effective or no longer efficient.
Right.
So again, the CDs talked about, you know, the path that I went through to get there, and it revealed some key insights that helped turn my life around. And interesting enough, it's none of the stuff that we talked about on this call, so it's not a repeat of what you and I just talked about.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you for that. Well, again, for our listeners, go to www.healthywealthy, the letter N is in Nancy, wise.com/Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E, and you can read the whole story about the secrets of creating wealth and take advantage of that. Stephen, what single idea would you like to leave our listeners with tonight?
unless you know what the puzzle looks like, it becomes very difficult, time-consuming, and frustrating to put it together.
Mm.
In other words, unless you know what you want your life to look like, you're going to have one heck of a time trying to live it.
Mm.
So get clarity on what you want your future to look like. Remember, tap into that mission. That's going to unlock your passion. And a lot of the things in your life that seem to be at random and out of place may start to line up. You may be able to operate at a more efficient and effective level and experience a great deal more fulfillment as you go through your life on a day-to-day basis, moving closer to that future profile. So, I mean, again, unless you know what the puzzle looks like, it's going to be very difficult to put it together.
Fabulous. Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Chris, I appreciate you having me.
It really has been an honor, and I have to say, in listening to you, it's clear that while you've enjoyed great financial success, it's really the value of your heart that comes through to me more than anything. And I see that it's clear that your financial success has come from the fact that you deeply care about people and really helping make a difference in people's lives. And thank you so much for that and for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom and your experience so that all of us can really begin to learn how to turn our passions into profits in a way that will allow us to truly make a living at doing what we love. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. And everybody, remember, put that puzzle together so you can live the life of your dreams and feel fulfilled on a daily basis and not wait for some specific defining moment. Life is supposed to be enjoyed on a regular basis, not just on Christmas, not just on our birthdays. Every day is a day that you should be given the gift. And the first person you should give the gift to is yourself, and that's the gift of a fulfilling life so that you can be a better gift to the people around you.
Wonderful. Good.
All right, everybody, God bless you, and good night.
Good night, Stephen. Thank you. And again, for our listeners, go to www.healthywealthy.com/Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E, and read about the Secrets of Creating Wealth program. I think that you'll really love that. We have, in 2 weeks, on August 9th, we're going to have some very special guests. As I mentioned at the beginning of this call, I'm not yet announcing those guests. The closest I'll come is mentioning that one of our guests is royalty, is actually descended from the royal line, and both of them are amazing, incredible people. I know that you are going to love this interview. You will not want to miss it. You're going to get a whole new perspective on what it means to live passion and doing it from a completely different angle and venue that we have discussed with anyone up till now. So in the next few days, we'll watch out for the Balancing Act newsletter. We will be announcing those guests then, and I think that you'll really love them. Again, then on August 23rd, we're going to be interviewing Ricky Byers-Beckwith, who is, along with her husband, they lead the Agape International Spiritual Center, an incredible spiritual community in Southern California. Her husband, Reverend Michael Beckwith, was the founder of that church many years ago. Ricky is an amazing musician and incredible soulful musician who today travels around the world with the Agape choir for which he's the musical director, and they have gained tremendous renown for their unbelievable performances. And we are going to talk with Ricky about what it takes to live a passionate life when one is a musician and maybe not always getting all the financial rewards that one would hope. And then in September, the beginning of September, we're going to be interviewing Byron Katie. And many of you may know that Katie is one of Janet and my great mentors. She is the author of Loving What Is, and her latest book, I Need Your Love, Is That True? And Katie's work, the process of her, what she calls four questions and a turnaround, has totally transformed the lives of thousands and thousands of people. In our experience, it's one of the most powerful techniques and processes that exist today for undoing those beliefs which are getting in your way of truly living your passions, and as Stephen was saying tonight, living your mission. So we've got exciting, exciting interviews coming up, and I'm going to open up the line now and say goodnight to everyone. Thank you so much for joining us.